Lately, we have frequently discussed the many perils and pillars of quantum mechanics and astrophysics. I found quantum mechanics to be extremely interesting and indulging. While it is extremely interesting and indulging, it is also extremely difficult to understand. I do not have any physics background. I have not even taken a physics class before. I mean, unless you count like an eighth grade one unit of physics, maybe. Maybe we could say that's one unit, like that's one. Maybe you can say that I have a physics background, but I don't think that really applies. But yeah, quantum mechanics is very confusing to me, but I'm starting to get used to it, I guess. At first glance, it seems like the most difficult subject that exists, and while it is, I can assure you that it is not as difficult as many think. While quantum mechanics really requires that one understands significant amounts of everything, and does significant amounts of studying, and even math, it requires that much just to even learn the fundamentals. It requires a significant amount of studying, a significant amount of math, just to learn its fundamentals. But once you do, it is quite an easy subject. It's not an easy subject, but it becomes more understandable. You see that things start to connect and correlate with one another, so it doesn't seem as terrible. In episode 6, we discussed the Schrodinger's cat thought experiment, which was an attempt to explain the Copenhagen interpretation and quantum superposition. I don't know why I did not know how to say Copenhagen, but yeah. At this time, I had very little understanding of quantum mechanics, and the research for the episode lasted a long time. I think I recollected that it was like 3 to 5 hours or something. Normally, it doesn't require that I do 3 to 5. I mean, lately, it's required that I do 3 to 5 hours, but like in the non-quantum mechanics videos or episodes, it requires like maybe an hour, because most of it is you already kind of know. It's just a lot of the quantum mechanics stuff is really building off like common knowledge, or like not common knowledge, prior knowledge, and then trying to understand it. Like, I'd say reading takes like half the time, and the rest of it is thinking in order to understand what I'm actually looking at. I'm sure that if you were to read it or to learn about it in a class or learn through a professor or something, it would be very easy, at least compared to what it is on Wikipedia or on various other sites like Stanford Encyclopedia of philosophy, which I always love to use, but it's still quite a difficult topic. I assume that I made a fair amount of mistakes in that episode, simply because I had a very rudimentary understanding of quantum mechanics. But after conducting numerous episodes of astrophysics and quantum mechanics, I feel that I am finally dipping my toes into the ocean of physics that exists right below my nose. I feel that I'm finally somewhat able to explain, even in a rudimentary way, the pillars of quantum mechanics. I thought I would make this episode to humble myself and prove to myself that I do not at all have even a rudimentary understanding of the Wild West of astrophysics, quantum mechanics, or the Wild West of physics in general, more like. Even so, in our relentless pursuit of knowledge and understanding, we stumble upon the greatest and most popular form of quantum mechanics, which is quantum entanglement. Which is a tremendous topic that humbles and horrifies the human brain. So we might as well just get into this. I was originally going to make this into an episode about entanglement and superposition, but I got so immersed in entanglement that I had no choice but to speak of quantum quantum entanglement alone. But it is a very heavy topic. There's a lot more to it than just spooky action. Albert Einstein literally called it spooky action at a distance. Like, doesn't that bring such Elon Musk vibes? Like, I don't mean to sound weird with saying vibes, but it brings such Elon Musk vibes. Like, he sounds so much like Elon Musk in that situation. It makes sense. But yeah, we have never really mentioned the concept of quantum entanglement before, even though it is quite an incredible topic. So I decided that we will discuss that as well today, or specifically today. Quantum entanglement is arguably weirder than most of the quantum mechanical concepts and dynamics. But it still is within the realms of reality and physics. It's not understood because, I mean, entangled particles make interactions at astronomically faster than the speed of light, so it violates everything, but it is real. Oddly enough, it actually exists. So because of this weirdness, why don't we just get into it? We gotta actually understand it. Entanglement is a difficult topic that I find that is not really, I find it is not really covered in depth. They only just mention it. It's only mentioned. And they talk about spooky action at a distance and how it travels faster than light. But like, what is actually happening? So that's what we're going to do in this episode. So quantum entanglement, just for the basics, is a phenomenon in which two or more quantum particles generate, interact, and distribute in a way that the quantum state of the particles cannot be explained independently from one another. That is what is defined as entanglement. It's very easy to understand. In and of itself, quantum entanglement is at the epicenter of the vast conflicts between classical, relativistic, and quantum mechanics. Obviously, relative and quantum mechanics, we know what happens. We know what the cosmic speed limit is, C, or, oh, what is it, like 290,000 kilometers per second? Like, I mean, that's problematic that entanglement occurs so quickly. I mean, then also, entanglement doesn't really occur in classical mechanics. At least I cannot think of them some myself. I bet there probably are examples of it, but I cannot think. I recollect any myself. Quantum entanglement was first theorized by physicists Albert Einstein, Boris Podolsky, and Nathan Rosen in a famous paradoxical thought experiment known as the Einstein-Podolsky-Rosen paradox. It's also known as the EPR paradox, if you know of that, which proved that the descriptions of quantum systems given by Schrodinger's wave function are correct, but not complete. Einstein, Podolsky, and Rosen proposed that entangled, so basically entangled particles, they basically proposed entangled particles that were separated and could both be measured merely by the measurement of one of the particles. So they're like mirror images of each other, of one another, for example. So if this entangled electron has an upspin, the other electron has a downspin. That's basically what it is. They're mirror images of one another. So this was applicable in the laws of quantum mechanics. So the paradox in this case really was how. How does this happen? Also, before we get into this, understand this measurement part is merely theoretical. We have discussed in previous episodes about waveform collapse, and it is guaranteed that waveform collapse will be discussed in a portion on quantum entanglement. The measurement problem makes every physicist want to die. It is the worst thing that could possibly happen. It is the most frustrating thing in quantum mechanics. It is probably arguably one of the most frustrating things in science outside of meteorology in general. It is very annoying for physicists to try to basically bypass the measurement problem and still come up short. Anyways, this paper reached Erwin Schrödinger, one of the gods of quantum mechanics, and the creator of the Schrödinger wave functions, who wrote to Einstein and first coined the term entanglement to, quoted by Schrödinger himself, describe the correlations between two particles that interact and then separate, as in the EPR experiment. So you'll learn that particles, for entanglement to occur, particles must interact. So this is exactly what Erwin Schrödinger is talking about. Schrödinger, being very interested in building on this hypothesis, formulated a paper himself that established quantum entanglement as the characteristic trait of quantum mechanics. Einstein and Schrödinger both knew of the strong mathematical support for quantum entanglement, but were dissatisfied by the fact that entanglement very obviously violated the theory of relativity through the fact that no information could travel faster than the speed of light, and yet the entangled particles were transmitting information seemingly instantaneously. Right now our numbers are at least 10,000 times the speed of light. That is the slowest. That's not the science fiction possible. That is the actual low range of this. So that's something. Way later, in 1964, another physicist by the name of John Stuart Bell discovered and proved that a concept known as the principle of locality, which states that an object directly is directly influenced by merely its immediate surroundings, was mathematically inconsistent with quantum theory. The principle of locality was formulated by Albert Einstein and other of the other founders of the EPR paradox, and they basically tried to develop against the loopholes in entanglement. So they were trying to go after they're basically trying to disprove entanglement in a way. Like, just locality is a weird topic. I suggest you definitely look it up because it's a very deep topic. Over time, the principle of entanglement began to take more ground, as in 1967, when the physicist Carl Cooker contributed observational evidence in which two photons emitted from a calcium atom were shown to be entangled. Many more experiments were conducted that seemed to conclude that entanglement existed beyond a shadow of doubt, but all cast mathematical loopholes that questioned the validity of the experiments. And always when there's a mathematical loophole, you have a problem. These loopholes always derive from the principle of locality and detection, and as a result, entanglement remained an unproven principle for nearly a century after it was first purported. It wasn't until 2015, literally 5 to 6 years ago, that loopholes from both detection and locality were finally closed when an experiment in which two separate photons were taken to two different locations and measured, and their properties were essentially measured. They proved beyond all reasonable doubt that the two photons were entangled with one another, as the correlations in their properties could never be explained by locality. Okay, so there's this probability thing. I remember Sean Carroll talking about this. Whenever it's like a 0.00000000006% chance of something happening, people will be like, "Oh, there's still a chance," but like, no, that's mathematically improbable. So they got a number similar to that, and at that point, it's just like, what are the chances? Like, even 1 in 10,000, you're like, really, what are the chances? I mean, it's unlikely. Many more experiments were conducted that seemed to conclude, even after this, that entanglement was valid, and since then it's become more of a cohesive principle. So at this point, entanglement basically grew into a cohesive, supportable theory in quantum mechanics, although there remains a single loophole known as notably, an unfalsifiable new loophole known as superdeterminism, which is another loophole in another quantum mechanical dynamic known as Bell's theorem. Superdeterminism states that one can evade Bell's theorem and entanglement itself by purporting that the quantum system, and I am not kidding, does not have free will when it is measured. This is essentially meaning that the physicists are basically creating an environment that is beneficial to the results. To the results they crave. So they're trying to prove entanglement or disprove it. If they were trying, so basically imagine like it's a biased experiment towards entanglement or towards measurement or something, like towards some quantum mechanical dynamic. That's basically what superdeterminism means. Basically, when you apply it to entanglement, so basically superdeterminism would state that the experiment was basically measured in such a way that it automatically yields the results that support entanglement. This hypothesis will always be a loophole in experiments surrounding entanglement, simply because, as the experimenter Alain Aspect says himself, is that no experiment, as ideal as it is, can be said to be totally loophole-free. Even so, with this experiment came the rise in quantum entanglement as a strong and testable theory, and also the rise of entanglement in popular culture as that crazy dynamic that can travel faster than light and break Einstein's theory of relativity. Spooky action at a distance. Next, we'll discuss what entanglement actually is and what it entails. Quantum entanglement is certainly a heavy topic, so it requires that we explain it in great depth, and hope to death that we do not mess up the fundamental understanding of the principle, because I know that I have failed fact checks in the past. I had to make some significant corrections on some of the descriptions of my podcast in the past. In this spooky action at a distance, known as entanglement, picture a photon. The photon is a massive massless particle that transmits the electromagnetic force, which we learned of in episode 19. Picture an experiment in which a concentrated laser is directed at two potential very specific crystals. The two potential crystals are known as BBO, otherwise known as beta barium borate, whose chemical formula consists of one barium atom, two boron atoms, and four oxygen atoms, along with beta BBO, there is lithium niobate. I'm not really sure how to say that. Which consists of one lithium atom, one niobium. Atom and three oxygen atoms. When a concentrated laser beam makes contact with these crystals, the crystals exhibit unusual optical effects that rarely, but do result in a single photon from a beam being converted into two photons, each with a fraction of the original energy of the other. And these photons are basically entangled. So, like, when these photons are separated, they're literally entangled with one another. Like I said this, I cannot tell you why this happens, simply because I don't think we know that. And also because many things in quantum mechanics occur without cause. It just simply happens. It's one of the fundamental nodes of quantum mechanics itself is that things can occur without cause. It's indeterminism. These entangled particles are essentially mirror images of one another. So basically what is reflected in the mirror image is pretty important in what I'm meaning. So when I mean that they are mirror images of one another, I mean that the traits of the two quantum systems, in this case, the two entangled photons, complement one another. So for example, an entangled photon A is in an upspin state, while entangled photon B has a downspin state. So they're just basically the opposites of one another. This applies to a vast majority of quantum systems, including the quarks and leptons. The quarks and leptons are basically the building blocks of matter. And in the case of quarks, the building blocks of the building blocks of matter. You can listen to episode 19 if you want to get some more information. In nature, entanglement occurs in some situations. An example of this is in a particle collision. At CERN, which is otherwise known as the Large Hadron Collider, they often collide particles and create entangled particles pretty much daily. They do it all the time. There are also numerous other ways by which an entangled particle arises. It's actually possible that all the particles in the universe are entangled, or at least were entangled at the beginning of the universe, at the beginning of the beginning of everything. A notable study, which I've linked in the description, purports to show that billions of entangled particles were discovered in what the authors describe as a strange metal. I'm not sure what they mean by strange metal, because I didn't read too far into it, but I saw that they found billions and billions of entangled particles. The billions and billions of particles discovered to be entangled in this strange metal arose a significant question that has existed since the dawn of the understanding of quantum entanglement. Could all the particles in the universe be entangled? This question has been brought up sometimes in the past, yet there is little significant scientific evidence indicating that it does. I recall that in Cosmos Possible Worlds, Neil deGrasse Tyson pondered quantum entanglement, and if I am reminiscing on this episode correctly, I haven't watched it in over a month, so I'm not quite sure. He also questioned if the entire universe existed in a state of entanglement. He also questioned if the entire universe was controlled by conscious, so we'll see. While this hypothesis remains virtually untested and without substantial evidence, it is compelling and thankfully falsifiable. It just requires that you measure a lot of entangled particles. As more evidence comes about and more particles are measured, we shall come to a conclusion on whether every particle in the universe is or is not entangled. The major question that arises is whether the beginning of the universe itself initiated the particle interactions that would entangle the entire universe. In a paper titled Everything is Entangled by physicist Roman Bunai, I'm not really sure about that, and Stephen Su, The two physicists showcase Big Bang cosmology as the primary source of evidence for a universe dominated with quantum entanglement. A significant portion of this paper was comprised of mathematics that I do not yet understand, and symbols that I do not yet understand, but here is basically the gist. Considering all the particles in the universe derive from the same place, it is plausible that they could all be entangled with one another. Furthermore, as explained by Stefan Hoyer, a physics PhD, the strength of entanglement does decay over time, but it is in what is known as it is experiencing a horizontal asymptotic decay, asymptotic. With the horizontal asymptote existing at zero, of course, x equals zero. Or y equals zero, not x equals zero. I apologize for that. It is y equals zero. Which would basically, at y equals zero, it would indicate a total loss of entanglement. Of course, you can't have a negative because what's the opposite of entanglement? Like, it's beyond the opposite of entanglement. It makes absolutely no sense. So basically, for anyone who does not know what an asymptote is basically a vertical or horizontal value that cannot be reached by a specific function. This could be an x or y or a cosine or a sine value. A notable example of asymptotes exists in a function known as f of x equals 1 over x, which is the inverse function. There's also the inverse square function, which is used in significant amounts of science, specifically classical mechanics and gravity. In gravity, the inverse square law applies to the level. I'm pretty sure it's like the level of gravity depending on how close you are to the center of a mass object. So, yeah, inverse square law, 1 over x squared. This function has a vertical asymptote with an x value or cosine value of 1. It's actually an x value or cosine value of 0, not 1. It's the x or cosine value is 0, not 1. I apologize for that. So the asymptote is 0, so it can get beyond 1, but it can't get to 0. So you'd have basically like two mirrored butterfly-looking things that would get ever closer to 0, but would never quite get there. It's literally impossible, like, just think about log decay. I'd like to think about log decay in that situation. Like exponential decay. It never really quite gets to zero, but it always gets closer. But it'll never get there, ever. At some point, it'll basically be zero anyways, but it'll always be there. But anyways, and if this is the case, and all particles that existed during the Big Bang, and meaning all the particles of mass that exist, are entangled, and while this would basically mean that all of them were entangled, and while their entanglement is weaker than it was at the formation of the Big Bang, the entanglement can never be broken, save one situation. Basically, it's known as sudden death of entanglement, and physicists are very baffled by this. A lot of it has to do with the quantum measurement problem, but at this moment, this dynamic is to be explained at a later date, meaning probably later today. But yeah, it's just basically sudden death of entanglement. A lot of it has to do with the quantum measurement problem. We have that problem all the time because we don't really understand how to measure anything yet. Quantum entanglement, everything that has to do with quantum mechanics has to deal with the quantum measurement problem. We could observe a million, billion, trillion, quadrillion things right through our minds, like right directly. But the problem is quantum measurement problem. It is one of the most baffling and misunderstood things in the entire realm of science. And that leads us into the next portion of this entanglement episode. The last conundrum of entanglement to be discussed today is, of course, waveform collapse. We've discussed waveform collapse in all too many episodes before. I think of 6 and 18 and possibly even 19. I'm not really sure if we actually mentioned it in that. But we definitely mentioned it in 6 and 18, and we probably mentioned it at least briefly in other videos and other episodes. But yeah, basically for a refresher, waveform collapse is known to occur when a particle is observed. So for example, this means that a photon and a wave particle duality, which we've discussed in previous episodes, it basically is a photon that is in a state of acting like a wave and acts like a particle. We can observe this through the double slit experiment, which was first initiated by Thomas Young in, I think it was 1801. But yes, definitely look into him. He is the, in a way, he is the early founder of quantum mechanics, but he didn't have any knowledge of it. He only was looking at light as a photon, whether it was a particle or a wave. And technically, he was right and wrong, because he discovered it to be a wave, but it's also a particle. So, for refresher, basically, this means that a photon and wave particle duality would be observed as a particle or a wave when measured. In terms of superposition, observation is essentially its demise. So how does waveform collapse actually affect quantum entanglement? Unfortunately, it affects quantum entanglement in a very similar way. Entangled particles are strangled and isolated from one another upon measurement. From what I've seen, the sudden death of entanglement dynamics we briefly spoke of earlier can occur when quantum measurement occurs, and always occurs when quantum measurement occurs. So if we wanted to, we could probably break the entanglement of everything in the entire universe. With great power comes great responsibility. When a particle interacts with its environment in a way that separates it from the particle that it is astronomically connected with, by interacting with the environment we imply that it is measured, it is disentangled with its entangled partner or partners, and as a result, the sudden death of entanglement occurs. It can be seen that quantum entanglement is similar to superposition in the way that it experiences the same waveform collapse and its subsequent disentanglement upon measurement or observation. So It experiences waveform collapse, because remember that entanglement itself is almost a collection and a sum of states. And in a way, entanglement is quite similar to superposition, so we're in that same region, we're in that same area. This does raise another question, though. So, like, how do we know whether a particle is entangled or not? That is a question that I think you all should, you all listening to this episode should look into yourselves. We unfortunately do not have enough time to get into that, but I'm sure we're going to make another episode on something like that, because entanglement is very fun to talk about. It's not fun to not understand, but it is very fun to talk about. For a short recap, entanglement is a phenomenon that links particles together, even at vast distances, in a mode that causes them to be essentially mirror images of one another. The dynamics of entanglement attracted many of the greatest physicists in human history, including Albert Einstein and Erwin Schrödinger. Yet many brilliant and profound questions remain unanswered and misunderstood within the great realms of entanglement and quantum mechanics. As with almost every other scientific concept that exists, there is yet so much more to be understood. There's a lot about quantum mechanics that is discussed on the YouTube channels and podcast channels that are like this. As I've said in countless prior episodes, there are 4 nanillion links that all derive from quantum mechanics and surrounding fields that you can use to continue on in your relentless pursuit of knowledge, of which I all highly recommend. I really like some of those sources that I have. I really love looking into them, even after I make these episodes, because there's so much more you can learn after first seeing it. So I strongly recommend that you guys do some more research. As this topic remains forefront, incredible, and unknown, quantum mechanics shall remain in the foreground of the podcast. It seems that astrophysics and quantum mechanics will soon dominate this podcast, which was once a general astronomy and science channel. It's still going to be a general astronomy and science channel. I want to keep it that way, but we're definitely going to get into some quantum mechanics for a while because it's simply very interesting to learn about. It seems that astrophysics and quantum mechanics are just incredible. So, like, I have no reason. Like, they're just my favorite things ever. Like, that's what I want to do when I grow up. That's what I want to do when I'm older. So, quantum mechanics is, I'm a little biased there, but we'll definitely get into some regular astronomy stuff. Like, I've been thinking about, like, types of exoplanets, what exoplanets we've discovered, what they entail, the weirdest things we've discovered, almost like that. But also, like, how was astronomy used for navigation, or basically a guide to the night sky, almost. Like, what is right ascension, what is declination? So we'll think about it. We'll make some new episodes about other things that have to do more with astronomy rather than physics. But just, we're going to keep on to this. We're going to keep on to this for a while. We're definitely going to stay within the realms of quantum mechanics in a fair amount of episodes. Maybe not all of them, maybe not half of them, but a fair amount. There's yet so much more to be learned about this divine universe, and exploring it requires that one delves into a billion different fields, which are not at all exclusive to physics, so that means we're going to be delving into millions of different fields, or even trillions, or even nanillions. Expect many more episodes surrounding astrophysics and general physics, but also expect some independent and invigorating episodes that are not entirely composed, or at all composed, of physics. They all will be composed of physics in some way, because physics is like the underlying element of the universe. Anyways, though, thank you all for listening, and as always, have a good morning, afternoon, evening, and night. Take care and stay curious.